Don't let me interrupt your conversations. I just did, yeah, I know. Oh wait, I have something cool to show you. I'm glad I thought of this. So yeah, this is kind of fun.
Thesis, the ability to move things using the mind, used to be the stuff of science fiction fantasy. Not anymore. Scientists in the US have developed a microchip which is implanted in the brain to operate computers and robots. Now, it could transform the lives of people who are paralyzed or have lost limbs. Scientists are now ready to start testing on humans.
With astonishing dexterity, a monkey reaches out to grab and turn a handle with a robotic arm controlled not by its hands, but directly by its brain.
It has no idea it's wearing a ridiculous hat right now.
It can alter the speed and direction of the arm, twisting the joints to home in on its target. It shows no signs of distress from the wires leading from electrodes in its brain to a computer. The reward for each turn of the handle, a drink of water. The mind control works through a device implanted directly into the motor cortex, the part of the brain that governs voluntary movement. Electrodes pick up pulses within the millions of neurons and send them to a computer, which deciphers the pattern and strength of the signals to move the robotic arm. At first, monkeys moved pincers to retrieve a marshmallow and feed themselves, a feat in itself, but the three-dimensional movement of a wrist is far more complex.
You can see that the wrist and the arm itself orients very nicely to this doorknob so that we can twist it.
Going to open the first email, which says congrats.
At Brown University in New England, scientists have just started the first clinical trials of a similar device. BrainGate allows tetraplegic patients to control a computer cursor by thinking about moving their paralyzed hand.
Next, I'm going to turn on my television.
If the trials are successful, millions could benefit. Patients who've had a...
On my television.
BrainGate allows tetraplegic patients...
I want one of those right there. What could go wrong, right? One of those. All right. So I wanted to start that, you know, to get you a, just to give you a sense of some cool stuff in the news. And I noticed they started my countdown. I kind of did that a bit early as people were coming in. And so now we're officially in, and I think they probably wanted to record it anyway. So we are now officially in the session. Welcome, everybody. My name is Mark Miller, and we'll talk about stepping into the near future of the IDE. I think you'll find this session fun and maybe insightful as well. So my contact details are over there on the lower left. So before we go into talking about what's coming, it's nice to look backwards and see how we got here. And I was born over on the left here a few years before this, 1964. And in 1970 was we had punch cards, and then we had text editors. And the first innovation here in DevTools is that I have on this time chart is text formatting, also known as pretty print, where you could reformat your source code in a way that matched your style. In 1975, the first IDE came out. It was known as Maestro, and they even had their own keyboard associated with it for working and using with that IDE. In 1977 is the first instance of code folding. You see that showing up in 1977. In 1979, static code analysis, known as Lint. In 1982, you have multi-undo and brace matching. So multi-undo, if you were around at that time, everybody was really excited about it, and it was on all the boxes, now with 8 levels of undo, right? So everybody was excited, and then there came 16 levels of undo, then 32 levels of undo, then unlimited, you know, undo was coming up after that. And then you also had brace matching, right, where you could see how things lined up. In 1985, this is one of the biggest, you know, most productive advancements in the history of developer tools. You have the introduction of syntax highlighting, where code is colorized based on what its meaning is. In 1989, you have the first appearance of plugins showing up in IDEs, which allow for extensibility, which allow for features being created by customers. In 1991, with Visual Basic, you have drag-and-drop form design. Another huge time saver with in the area of GUI development. In In 1993, you have advances in both markers and templates. So markers are the ability to store positions and find your way back, and templates are the ability to, like code snippets, the precursor to code snippets that you see in Visual Studio today. In 1994, with Smalltalk, you have their browsing refactoring browser. In 1996, you have IntelliSense. In 1997, you have Consume First Declaration, where you write a bit of code, and then it creates the piece that doesn't exist yet. Right? We see that in Visual Studio and other tools today. In 1999, you have something called Declaration View, which is the precursor to Visual Studio's code window, where it shows you what's going on behind the thing you're on. So if you're on a method call, it'll show you maybe the body of that method, for example, that sort of thing. So that's coming in 1999. In 2002, you have background error checking. And in 2005, you have modeless refactoring and preview hinting showing up. And in 2007, you have tab to next reference, a navigation feature that quickly gets you from one place to another. And then you have structural search and replace in 2009. And that's what we've got in terms of the advances in DevTools. So that's 40 years. And those are what I consider some of the more significant breakthroughs along that way. Now, there's some things that I haven't included, like version control and things like that, that traditionally exist outside of the IDE. I've kind of focused on what you're seeing inside the IDE and what's going on. The other thing that's kind of interesting to me is this cluster that shows up in the 1990s. I don't really have any comment on it other than I find it very interesting, right? This is where you're seeing a lot of developments showing up, a lot of significant developments, right? Drag and drop form design, IntelliSense is showing up there, Consume First Declaration, all those things are showing up in that decade. All right, so the other thing that's interesting is if you look at over time from 1970 to today, quality, efficiency, and sophistication, you see all of them jumping up over time, right? Based on what kinds of, you know, depending on what the innovation is, right? For example, here you can see syntax highlighting in 1985, and you're seeing spikes in efficiency as well as sophistication, because the feature allows you to have more sophisticated code and maintain that with less effort, okay? So these are trends, and I see these trends continuing. Right? As we move forward, we should be able to see continual advances in quality, in efficiency, in terms of, and when I say efficiency, I mean less effort from the developer resulting in more sophisticated code. Okay? All right. So human-machine interfaces. So I'm now looking at like the hardware component. How do humans interact with machines? So you've got keyboard, you've got mouse, you've got touch, you've got Kinect, right? Kinect is very cool. They've sold something like 10 million of these. It's the fastest selling electronic device of all time. And it's really, really cool because it's a new way of interacting with the machines. You also have voice, which has been struggling for about like 20 years to try and, you know, kick in and actually do something that people feel is really well, really productive. You also have something, if you were in my session earlier today, you heard me talk about this, but you have something called gaze tracking. Gaze tracking is something that I find incredibly useful in terms of providing additional context. Where is the customer looking? Where are they looking on the screen? That additional context can help out things like voice recognition and provide context for that and other things as well. Right. So where are you looking? And then you have mind control, right? We saw a little, you know, preview of that. A little preview of that before, at the beginning. So these are my predictions for future hardware trends. What am I expecting to see? So Kinect already can give us, you know, vision and depth to some degree, but the resolution of it is fairly low. It's 640 by 320, which means if I'm standing 5 feet away from it, it can barely pick out my fingers. In fact, the distance across my fingers is about 5 pixels at that distance in space. So it's very hard to get finger recognition. As a result, what happens is the Kinect SDK, at least on the Xbox, gives you a skeleton up to the wrists, up to the palms. And that's it. It does not show you fingers. But fingers are very useful, right? If I wanted to communicate with my computer with sign language, or I wanted to, you know, point or things like that, that's useful. But it's hard to do right now with the Kinect. You can hack it and try to make that work, but still you're dealing with low resolution. So one of my predictions is because Kinect is so successful, so selling so well, that I predict that we're going to see an increase in the vision in depth over the next 5 years. So doubling that, for example, doubling up that, well, it would actually quadruple the number of pixels if you doubled both the height and the width of that. And that more detailed information is going to, and also more power on the Kinect itself, so that we'll be able to come back with a skeleton that includes fingers. That includes perhaps facial positions of like, you know, eyebrows, you know, that sort of thing. And ultimately, I want to have, you know, I want to have, using just a passive webcam-like experience or a Kinect, be able to tell where the customer is looking within 1 degree of precision. I see that happening sometime in the next 10 years. emotional recognition is also in there. In the next 25 years, the mouse is dead. That's my prediction, right? It's got a lot of limitations right now. It's two-dimensional. It requires a transition, you know, from keyboard over to the side. We're, you know, moving around like this. We're on the surface. I see this dying in the next 25 years. Sometime in the next 25 years, I see also the ability to, for us as developers to say, here's what I want in a keyboard, and then have that custom printed and delivered. Right, custom printing of devices like keyboards, and in the back of my head, a little voice is saying, "Yeah, Mark, that one may not come true." You know, we'll see what happens on that, but possibly a custom keyboard, something like this with buttons to allow me to do the things that I want to do, jumping around, that sort of thing. Between 25 to 100 years, I see Wi-Fi enabled brain implants. Right, kind of like what you saw before, but without all those wires coming out, and probably a lot thinner. And what's cool about this is it now allows us to control things just by thinking, right? The top of the head where you saw that thing, you know, connected is the part that controls your muscles, right? So just by thinking whatever I want to do, working on a keyboard, that sort of thing, I'm able to now, you know, write code, right?
The next virus
affecting someone's brain? The next virus? Okay, so we're concerned about virus over here? Shame on you. The future is good, not bad, right? Yeah. Yes. Okay, so Jeroen says that it's he thinks it's going to be sooner. So I think part of the reason I don't want to put that sooner because I don't want everybody to run screaming and panicking out into the streets, right? So I'm sorry? Yeah, you don't want him hacking your brain, right? That's right. So there's maybe some concern, I see. Yeah, I didn't really think about that until now. But let's just assume that everything is good going into the future. And so I see, in terms of the developments here with regards to the Wi-Fi-enabled brain implants, well, first one is control, being able to control things, right, like you saw with the monkey video at the beginning. Number two is tactile feedback. So I go to reach, and I actually feel I touch something, right? So I'm able to get some sort of feedback there, right? Because right now, controlling things in the air is a little bit, you know, it doesn't have that tactile feedback of a keyboard, right? Yes. So the tactile feedback is through brain stimulation, right? So that's the idea. Boom, click, oh, something is there, right? Feel it, hear it, all of that. And then the next step, that's a simulation. It's not really a glass breaking on the floor. It's all virtual. In fact, you're all in pods right now, and I'm sucking the energy out of you right now. You're not really in this room. So speaking of which, the third item on here is an augmented reality, right? The ability to project onto your retina what's out here, right? The cool thing there is, like, you want to go somewhere, and your GPS says, here, turn left, and you see the arrow on the street, right? You know, regardless of where you are. You look at it, you see it right down there, right? And then, well, I'm sorry, what?
And then you missed
a
little kid.
You missed a little kid, right? So... Okay, you guys are really scary. It's very scary over here to me right now. So what's cool about that is once you have this, right, anything is game, right? You can create anything. And it's fun to me to think about this, exciting to me, because if you think about the world we live in now, it's essentially all an illusion anyway, right? I'm going to show you stuff in a little bit, some of which will be an illusion, some will be real, right? And... you know, if you have questions afterwards on top of what was real that I just saw and what was an illusion, right? Well, think about it. We live in a world where we can essentially present anything to the customer within a screen, right? Yeah. Jeroen says he thinks I'm an illusion. Yes. I told you, you're in a pod. Jeroen, I'm going to shut you down in a minute if you don't, you know, hitting the button. Okay. So over the next 100 years, I predict mouse is dead, keyboard is dead, and the pad is dead. That's my prediction. Why do I want the mouse dead twice? yeah, I don't. It's because of this guy right here. So there we go. There's a mouse with a brain implant right there. All right. So let's see. What was on this slide right here? Let's go back. I kind of advanced past it quickly. Touching fusion. There's one other thing I think I wanted. There's another slide. Oh, you know what? I think I hid that other slide. So let's show it to you since I've said I've hidden it. Because it's like nothing bugs me more than if somebody says, is my mouse not working? It's dead. Yeah, exactly. There you go. This is the one right there. So let's unhide that and we'll just show this slide. So some predictions I wrote down in here. So one of them is scalability. So in the next, this is short term, right? I think in the next 5 years, you're going to be able to open up huge projects with instantly in Visual Studio, right? And with no perf or memory hit that's noticeable, right? Also, building and compiling should be pretty fast as well by being able to distribute that work among multiple machines. One of the other things that's interesting is decoupling the language from the developer. So instead of the developer thinking in the specifics of a particular language, the developer simply thinks, okay, class, methods, properties, along those lines, and builds code in that way, which makes transition from one language to another very easy, right? If I can just, you know, if I can think in the essence of what I want, then I can move from at least one structured language to another structured language.
Let the customer code?
Yeah, your boss.
Let the customer code? Well... you know, I still see developers as doing that, right? Because to me, the idea of bringing customers in to do it, they can get a certain distance, right? But then if they try to go beyond that, I think what happens is you end up doing more damage than is worth, right?
How about focusing during developing? You don't want to have a class coffee suddenly in your code or something like that.
Right. So focusing, okay. Can you work on that joke a little bit and come back to us later? I know it's going to be funny. No, all right.
Actually, a serious question.
Oh, okay. That was a serious question? No, you have one.
No, seriously, how about focusing? What do you think about...
You mean monitoring the focus of the developer? Are you thinking, in other words, detecting if the developer's not focused and therefore on the verge of... Yes.
How you can ensure staying focused if you're doing everything with your brain?
How can you ensure staying focused on creating the code if you're doing everything with your brain?
Yeah,
right?
We are so,
let me answer that. So when you see the video of the monkey, right? The way they train the monkey is they first give the monkey a joystick, right? And the joystick controls the robot arm. And it wasn't, when they first did it, it was not that complex. It was a two-dimensional device. And the monkey moved the joystick. It moved the pointer to a point in two-dimensional space. And then what they did is they hooked in, and while the monkey was doing that, the chip in the top of the head, it's got an array of 64 pins by 64 pins, and that is essentially doing something similar to voice recognition. It's looking at the signals that the monkey is sending out. Okay, and it's moving, and then what they do is they disable the joystick, so it doesn't not functional, and they now read the data from the monkey's thoughts and move it, but the monkey's still moving the joystick, okay, and it's seeing the thing moving. Eventually, the monkey realizes it doesn't need to move the joystick anymore, okay, and it just goes to thought, and the monkey is moving it. So the question is, how do we stay focused? Well, it's going to be no harder than it is to sit down and to write code using the keyboard, right? Because it's the same amount of motion, memory control, right? Controlling your motion, right? We're able to think while we're able to drive our muscles, right? We're able to do those things at once. So I don't anticipate a focus problem. In fact, it's probably, you know, the opposite. Instead of actually having to type in things, we'll think try finally, you know, tunk, tunk, and we'll get that. Right, I think it'll simplify things rather than typing in, because otherwise, right now to it, I have to like move to the T, move to the R, hit the Y, enter, hit the brace. There's so much complexity in actually typing out a try finally now. Was there a comment?
Actually, you get some virtual fingers thinking with your virtual.
Yes,
fingers.
You're thinking with your virtual fingers. Exactly. Yeah. Overheard at Dev Days. Sure. Yeah.
Did you say just say a decoupling of language from a developer?
I don't think so. I don't think developers will think in code. I think they'll think in, to some degree, a structural kind of way. You know, certainly, you know, with what we do, there's kind of two components to it. There's a structural component, like the class, the methods, the, you know, the properties, those kinds of things. And with an interface, there's obvious structural pieces there. And then there's kind of a flow as well within the individual methods, you know, the logic that goes in there. So within the methods, I think they'll certainly think about flow. But I think outside of that, I think they'll think structure, not so much code. Right? I want a class. The class has these methods and properties. These are the types of the properties. You know, the methods have these parameters. You know, those kinds of things are like the entry points. It's almost like thinking more in terms of interfaces than it is thinking in terms of the actual specifics of the code.
But isn't that what they promise us already for 30 years? Like, you can generate everything by specifying what you
can do. Okay, so isn't that what they're already promising us already? So you're talking about like design tools, right, where I can... Right, where you specify business functionality and then generate the code. Yeah, so they've been promising us this already. Yeah, it hasn't really caught on because it's, I think, you know, not easy to use. Right, it's not fast and efficient. It's right now currently faster and more efficient to use a keyboard, I think. That's why it hasn't caught on. Richer source code documents. This is kind of interesting. The ability to, in addition to storing source code, stick something else in there. Right, whatever, it doesn't matter. Right, like maybe, for example, HTML comments or images or, you know, audio notes or something along those lines. a flatter UI. So you're going to see, instead of, you know, in the old days, which are kind of, I guess, the nowadays, right, you see a lot of dialogues that are showing up inside of, like, you know, Visual Studio, right, in the IDEs. When I want to, for example, extract a method, a dialog comes up, things like that. I think you're going to see that dropping away. So instead of seeing those dialogues pop up, you're likely to see less of that. So this one's interesting too, a one-step solution-wide quality upgrade. So the idea is you've got source code, but it kind of sucks in some parts maybe, right? Or there's something wrong, right? So the idea is you're able to right-click on the solution, you say, just fix this, upgrade it. And what it will do is it'll go through, it'll find problems, and it'll fix them. Right? And so, you know, right now we can already do this with simple problems, but what I'm predicting is more complex problems. As an example, you know, one of the things that you see that's a big problem in software is code duplication, right? If I have, you know, one method, I copy it, I make some subtle small changes to it, and then I copy it again, but maybe I'm copying that bug across several different places. Somebody discovers a bug, we trace through, oh, it's in this method, we fix it. We go back, ship an update. A few months later, another customer finds a bug, the same one, but oh, it's over in this code. We fix it, right? The thing is, as a developer, we're really good at tracing through and fixing a bug. But in the moment we're fixing the bug, we're not so good at realizing that this code might be somewhere else because we work in teams, right? And sometimes teams have junior level developers, right? So it happens, right? And so the idea is that we have this quality upgrade, and part of that quality upgrade is to essentially compress the source code, right? Instead of having a lot of duplication, we compress it so there's less duplication, right? Things like that. And so what my prediction is as we move forward in the next 10 years, the quality in which we'll be able to find these kinds of problems that normally you would expect a high-level developer with huge amount of intimate knowledge of the entire source code base to be able to solve, we're able to solve those and detect those and fix those with software. And from a trust level, too, I'm seeing this, too, with regards to what customers are asking for, what developers are asking for. Developers are, you know, once they trust the tool, they want to stop working on a file basis and they want to start working on a project or solution basis. They want to just say, look, here's what I want to do. I want to fix it across the board. Any opportunities, like as an example, opportunities to find, you know, properties with backing store and change them to auto-implemented. You know, find all those. Just clean it up, right? Also very cool for moving forward into new technologies, right? This idea of this one-step solution-wide quality upgrade. So I like this idea of being able to do that. High-speed visual elements design. Holy cow, are we in need of this now? The last major significant development in visual design, and I mean, you know, I don't know if I'm calling, I don't really calling Blend, in, I'm not really counting Blend in this, but the last major one, in my opinion, is 1996, right? It's the form designer. Even with Blend, things have not changed much. You still have dropping controls, and you still have a property grid. Blend added the search ability to search for properties, which is great for reducing noise, right? But you're still doing this, click, 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 looking left, looking right, looking left, looking right, right? It's sorely in need of a high-speed productivity update, right? It's been 14 years, 15 years. So, you know, I see this happening in the next 10 years, that people are going to figure out, okay, yeah, there's much faster ways to lay out forms and create them. And then I hear again this one that my little tiny voice is saying, I don't know, developer keyboards, dedicated developer keyboards. I think because I want one, right, that I keep showing up. I want a button that says jump and other buttons that say how far. That's what I want, right? So I'm going to say, you know, jump a page, jump, you know, within a camel case word, you know, jump structurally, jump, you know, whatever, jump to the next reference. I want that kind of a thing. So those are my predictions. All right, so now let's run into the demos. And these, I think, you'll find are going to be fun. That is my hope for it, at least. So let's see what we have. So one of the things here that I'm predicting is, I should probably talk about HTML comments first because you're seeing some of here. So I'm in Visual Studio. And so I'm predicting that sometime in the future, we'll be able to stick comments that essentially HTML. That we can do, for example, like this, comments can be rendered in full color. And for anyone, you know, wondering if this is an illusion or not, I'm actually in Visual Studio, and there you go. You can see that. So I actually haven't answered your question, actually, now that I think about it. The other thing, let's bring this keys window up so you can see the keys that I'm pressing here. Let's clear that. And so here I have an example in VB entitled Snippet Efficiency. So we're talking about code snippets. So right now we have some general code snippets. But what if they went to the next level? What if we could start doing combinations with them? And I'll show you what I'm talking about on there. So for example, if I want to create a class, I'll type in the letter C there. I'll type in employee like that, hit enter. If I want to now create a property, I can use the letter P. And then I can do S for string. So I'm combining P with S. And then I'm getting a property of type string like that. I type in name and I hit enter, I'm down at the end. If I want a property of type integer, I type in PI like that. Just combine them and type in age and I hit enter, I'm down. So pretty simple. You can see the keys that I pressed down here. So let's go over into C#. And I have a method here called snippet efficiency. So watch the keys below. So we're in C#, and then we press the same keys. Type in C for class, type in employee. Hit enter, come down here, type in PS for property of type string. I'm doing that combo. Type in name, hit enter, type in PI, and hit age. Now, what's cool about this is I'm typing in the same keystrokes in both languages, right? And I'm able to generate code very quickly, right? Once you're able to do this, you can start thinking in terms of more of the structural aspects of it, right? And that takes care of the one half of it, and then you're still working in code in terms of the flow. But even there, inside the flow, like for example, if I'm inside an if block, and I'm like, if I have some expression, AAA, for example, and I type in OR, which is like a VB thing, right? And I hit the space bar, I would expect it to do that. Or if I hit AND in the space bar, I would expect it to do that, right? So what it's doing is it's lowering that barrier between languages and making it so that I can simply think in whatever language, doesn't matter, and there's kind of an auto correction thing going on. So possibility, we may see this coming up in the future. Let's go into the next thing. So we're talking about HTML comments, which means we ought to be able to stick a picture inside of the code, like that. So there's an example of that. Let me close this down because we don't need this anymore. So and what else can we do? So under richer documents, color immersion. So here's an example where we have some color swatches in here. And the color swatches actually correspond to the color off to the right, right? This is kind of cool because otherwise, to figure out what the color is, you have to kind of calculate it in your head, right? For me to get that this is purple might be hard. I could probably guess red, okay, because this is kind of low value here, but still challenging. Plus, you ought to be able to click on the swatch and then bring up a color picker where you can come in and change the color of it. For example, let's go out to orange here because I don't really have that. Pick orange and then click OK. And then it changes and updates the code and updates the color swatch. So color immersion is something that is something that you would expect to see. And things like this, right, where you take something that might be otherwise hard to understand and make it much more easy to understand. and having a richer document, being able to support richer documents like this, which is something Visual Studio has made, laid down some significant, 2010 has laid down significant architecture to be able to support this, is something that I see coming in the future. You have it already is the question. Okay, so some is an illusion, some is not, right? So this one right here is, this one here is also pretty exciting to me. I want this so much. So the one before, yes, it exists already. This one is something I want that does not exist, but I really want it. Unfortunately, I cannot get approval to make this. I can't get anybody to say, yes, you can do it. But I'm trying. So up here in the top, you can see I've got, you know, get distance the old way. I've got math square root, math pow. I'm essentially doing something that looks a lot like this. And that's what I want. I want an in-source expression editor with debugging abilities, watch abilities, all of that. Right? Does anybody else want this? Does anybody else want this? Oh, look at that. That's like 30% at least. Okay, so maybe I can take that back and we can get permission to write this. But yeah, and I want an in-source editor right here where I'm just click on this, equation editor comes up, right? Just like, what's it called, MATLAB or something like that, I think. Something like that. That to me is fun and exciting. I definitely want that. Flowchart. So notice the code on the left, the flowchart on the right. Something like that. This is certainly possible right now to do this. It's also possible to do it as you're seeing it right now. The problem I've always had with flowcharts, the reason I'm not sure something like this exists yet, is that often, look at how concise this is here, and look at how much space is required here, right? And if these were more complex expressions, it would be even more complex. But I like the idea, though, of being able to optionally view the flow as a flowchart. Being able to view it, maybe make changes, but it's not stored separately. It's just simply live interpretation of what the code is. That, to me, is kind of interesting. Have you seen this in the mid-90s? Quiet in the back. Quiet in the back. And what else do I have here? Color Immersion, Expression Editor, Flowchart. So I did those. And new keyboard demo. What is that? Do I have anything there? I'm not sure what I had was there. HTML comments, modeless flat UI. Oh, modeless flat UI. So for example, so I was talking about this before. So right now, if I want to do a reorder parameters, right, it does this. The dialog comes up, blocks my source code. It gets in the way. So one of the things that might be happening in the future is something that looks like this, where I'm able to actually simply just move things around right in the source code, get them in the order that I want them to be in, like that, and then hit enter and apply it all the way across, right? The source code is now the UI, something that could be possible. Let's look down here under extract method, the same kind of thing here. The current way of doing an extract method is if I were here, let's do this. Let's select this block to here. And then we'll say in here, extract method. Boom, it comes up. We see a dialog. In the future, I think we're going to see something more that looks like this, where we're able to put it, it comes out, and now we just either specify the name, or if we like it, we're done. Right? Something along those lines. So it'll be more efficient, right? No dialog at all. Right? We just go right up and get into it. Okay? So, and now let's go to, and I think that's it over here. So the last thing I will show you, oh, actually, I have this little code review piece right in here. The glasses are awesome, aren't they? They're from Willy Wonka, the Mike TV glasses. Yeah. Yeah, I feel they give me credibility. That's why I wear them, right? So, all right, so we're in here, and it asks the question, can we please break this up into smaller methods? So with that, I'll change over to a custom keyboard demo. All right, let's drop that down. And so here, it's probably going to be better if I put this over my head. I'll try not to disturb the microphone. So let's come back here in a second. Let's drop a marker here. Whoops, oh, I did the wrong one. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can remember how to go back here. There we go. What is it? There's where that's my marker drop. Okay. All right. So let's go up to the top of the file. All right. And so let's show you just like creating some code in the future with a custom keyboard, right? I might come in here like this. I might want to create a class like that. Whoops. Hold on. Let's do that one more time. All right. C. And then... what is it? There. That's what I want. All right. So there's my class. Give it a name. I need an uppercase letter. So I'll do this. And bring it back down. There we go. Come in. I want to get a new, you know, some new property in there. So I'll do, well, we'll just do this and that. And boom. There we go. And let's do again. I can't think of any good names, so we'll just call it my name right here. Like I say, this could be an illusion. This may not actually be happening. Right? All right, so let's go back. We'll pick up that marker. We'll pick up that marker. We'll come back in here, and now we'll break this up. So we're going to take that same selection. Oh, wait, what's wrong with my selection? Hold on. Try one more time. Still not giving it to me. What is not? What's my problem? Oh, I see. You're right. Up at the top. Let's fix that. Let's go fix that. There we go. So, whoops, not there. I want this one. All right. Thank you guys for spotting that for me. So, boom, 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 boom. There we go. Boom. Boom. Something I didn't like about that with regard to the formatting of that. Let me just reach for the keyboard. Nobody boo for a minute. Interesting. So the format, so there must be something else wrong with this code somewhere. So it's not, so we got an extract method, but I'm just noticing the other pieces are not falling into place. So let me go out and let me tell you a little bit about what's going on and how this is happening, right? As you're probably wondering, I actually did this demo last week in India, and I didn't explain what was happening. And everybody thought that I was using some kind of audio recognition from a real guitar, and I was figuring out what to do based on the notes I was playing. And so I'm telling you that's not the case. What's happening is I've got an Xbox 360 remote interface, right? It's essentially like an Xbox 360 controller. Plugged into my computer, I have a wireless receiver, all right? And that's how they're able to talk. I have a plugin inside of Visual Studio. I have it's using direct input, which is part of DirectX. And so whatever I press, whatever key is interpreted. And then the other thing that's happening is it's playing a sequence of notes that are coming out of a file. In fact, I can actually, if you look at the bottom left in the status bar, when I move this button up and down, I can pick different songs. So there's Paperback Writer, Hello Goodbye, Yellow Submarine. Right? It's not bad, right? Woo! Right. So I also want to talk to you about navigation on this because, you know, I was talking about the custom keyboard. I actually enjoy navigating on the guitar more than I do on the regular keyboard. And I'll show you why. First of all, to go up and down is just strum up to go up or strum down to go down. If I want to go left or right by a single character, I hold down this green button right here on the fret bar. So there's left, there's right. If I want to go between camel case, the uppercase letters in a camel case identifier, I hold down the next one down, red. So we're increasing in size of jump as we move down. So now, here you can see I jumped right there to the two. Right? If I move up one line, I can go, see how I'm jumping there? Nice, little camel case navigation there. This is nice for if I do an extract method and I want to rename a portion of something. Right? I can also combine any of these with the blue key and get a selection. I like the blue key because my selection by default is blue color, so it's easy to memorize, right? So I can go in there and very quickly get that piece I want. Okay? The next one down is the yellow key. That's for going word to word. So there you can see that. I'm going word to word now. Right? The next one, the blue one, as I said already, is selection, right? I can combine it with any of the nav keys. Orange one is selection increase. So I can increase by logical blocks. See that? And I can go back the other way by strumming down. Down here is structural navigation. So I can go between siblings. Let's go up a bit. So now I'm going going up and down through siblings, and then I can go also to parents and children as well. Like that. Like that. Sibling to sibling. Like that. So you can see why I like this better, right? Right? What else do I have down here? Oh, the yellow one goes between recent edit points. So I can strum up or strum down to go through all the edit points that I've been at. Blue is page up and page down. And what is orange? I forget what orange is. Oh, file to file. Oh, this one's cool. I didn't show this. So I'll show you that with the last one there, the deeper declaration. Where was that? Deeper understanding. So right now we have consume first declaration. Let me get rid of this. Oh, interesting. We'll get rid of this. And here we go. So you've probably seen consume first declaration in Visual Studio, right? Where you have something like this, for example, new comic book, it's undeclared, and you want to get a declaration on it. So one of the things that I see coming in the future is a deeper declare on this, where we're able to come in and say declare class, and based on all that it sees in the code, it comes in and gets that to you. So right there you saw in comic book, there it is right there. It had all of these assignment property assignments and methods were now just created for us and generated inside of this. So that's something that's interesting. Also, same thing down here, like with enum elements. Here I have element kryptonite, I have element helium, etc. I can just come in here, do a declare on that, and it just grabs and sees all of those. So you see coming as well, right? This consume first declaration that is smarter, allowing you to do more of the easy, simple code from a consuming standpoint, and then very quickly go out and declare it. So with that, that's all I've got. I've got 3 minutes to go, but I'll kind of say maybe I'll end early, and then if you guys, does anybody have any questions they want to ask in front of anybody else? Nope. Yeah, everybody's thinking, oh, it's got to be a good question, huh? All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of the conference.